I'm Martha Baker with the Baker Ranch in Cold Spring, Texas. You're listening to the latest news in Texas agriculture on Texas Ag Today.
This is Texas Ag Today, the number one source for the latest news in Texas agriculture. The largest and most experienced farm news team in the Lone Star State covers it all. From the piney woods of East Texas to the rocky ranges of the Trans-Pecos, and from the Panhandle down to the Rio Grande Valley. Here's today's top stories.
In the aftermath of the Texas Panhandle wildfires, ranchers who are now in the earliest stages of the recovery process have some important decisions to make. I'm James Hunt, and we'll talk about that on Texas Ag Today.
From buying American farmland at an alarming rate to cybersecurity hacks and stealing U.S. intellectual property, members of the House Committee on Agriculture Wednesday heard about the threat the Chinese Communist Party reportedly poses to U.S. agriculture. I'm Jessica Domel, and I'll have more coming up on Texas Ag Today.
Emerging corn and greening pastures in South Central Texas. I'm Tom Nicoletti, and we'll go to Lavaca County and find out how the spring crops are doing at this point on Texas Ag Today.
Now, here's the host of Texas Ag Today, Kerry Martin.
Hello, Texas. Why don't you jump on in with me and buckle up? We're going to take a ride around the Lone Star State as we cover the most important industry in this greatest state in the nation, Texas agriculture. Be sure to hold on tight because it all starts right now. With so much loss and devastation in the Texas Panhandle, it's hard to see any silver lining coming out of such a tragedy. But there will be some benefits following the fires. Dr. Tim Steffens is a West Texas A&M professor and AgriLife Extension Rangeland Resource Management Specialist.
I'm nearly hesitant to say anything positive because there's so many people that have been devastated by this fire. But one thing we can say is we have managed some structure on brush, some of our re-sprouting species like sand sage and plum and things like that. Now they're not back and they're going to grow back, but things like sand sage, I mean, cattle will eat not necessarily all that non-readily, and when it's freshened up, they'll do so a little bit more. So that part's good, and we've got about 1.5 million acres now that don't have any eastern red cedar on. That's a pretty sanguine way to get it done, but I mean, we do have that to look at as a bright side.
Steffens says there is an opinion that grass regrowth is better after a burn, but he doesn't necessarily agree with that. Burned out ranchers have some important decisions to make. James Hunt has the story from Amarillo.
One of the areas hardest hit by our recent wildfires is Hemp Hill County up in the Northeast Panhandle. The extension agent there is Andy Holloway. When we talked this week, I asked Holloway how ranchers in his area are going about the business of recovery and maintaining their operations, specifically their decisions on what to do with their animals.
I think the strategy that the ranchers are using just depends on the rancher. The large ranches seem to load their cows and ship them up north or to some other place. There's a lot of good wheat pasture around in some of the parts of Texas, Oklahoma. So there's been a lot of cattle that have been shipped to graze out wheat pasture. The smaller ranchers, they're wanting to hold on to their cows. So they're trying to use feed resources that are available here through the livestock supply point, and maybe some of them didn't lose all their hay. Then we've got all this cake and feed that people have brought thousands of tons of. So they're using these resources to try to hang on. A lot of these cows are ready to calve, and they want to get those calves, which represent their cash crop, out of those mother cows. And one of the concerns I have with that, though, is soon as it starts getting green here, people are going to be real tempted to turn back out on those pastures. And that's the worst thing you could do. Those pastures are going to have at least one growing season, if not longer, before that grass plan is healthy enough to be reestablished enough to support that kind of grazing pressure.
Some words of caution there from Hemp Hill County Extension Agent Andy Holloway. I'm James Hunt on the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.
With the U.S. beef herd at record low levels, producers may be finally thinking of starting a rebuild. Dr. Dan Tracy of Beef Technical Services with Zoetis says it's a big decision.
There's a lot of things we need to take in consideration. I'm glad to see that rebuilding of the herd, because that's a good thing, because we're in a state where we probably need to be. The considerations we need to make is there's a lot dependent on these heifers, because they make up the history of the herd moving forward. They set the pace of the herd moving forward. So we want to select heifers more towards the beginning in that calving season, because we know they stay in the herd longer. We know their offspring outperform reproductively and on the steer end production-wise, too. So we made that commitment to do so.
The rebuilding begins with selecting the right heifers.
But we know there's also a value money that we have to spend on these heifers until we get them into the pre-breeding phase as far as feed, vaccines, veterinary care as far as doing some reproductive scores or pelvic measures. And we know there's a cost on a per calf to pay that back. We also have taken advantage of new technology as far as genomics to actually identify those replacements earlier, depending on where we want to meet our genetic expectation, the herd moving forward, so we can make decisions about that heifer earlier, whether we market her as more of the beef industry or we continue forward or bring her to a part of the being a replacement.
That's Dr. Dan Tracy with Zoetis. The House Ag Committee heard about the threat the Chinese Communist Party poses to U.S. agriculture. Jessica Domel has more from the hearing.
Citing concerns with national security and the nation's ability to feed itself in the future, the U.S. House Committee on Agriculture held a hearing Wednesday on the danger the Chinese Communist Party poses to American agriculture. Committee Chairman G.T. Thompson says China, which is governed by the Chinese Communist Party, has gone out of its way to reduce its reliance on American agriculture, all the while aggressively pursuing tactics that threaten our nation's ability to feed itself. He said the threats are multifaceted, strategic, incendiary, and require a coordinated and proactive response.
These last few years have seen China steal U.S. intellectual property, hack critical cybersecurity and related infrastructure, weaponize agriculture trade, and acquire American farmland at an alarming rate. Each of these disrupt our national security, our rural communities, and our resiliency.
Kristi Noem, governor of South Dakota and former member of the committee, was one of the panelists Wednesday. She said she has witnessed the Communist Party in China work to systematically take over our food supply chain.
They have decades ago started buying our fertilizer companies, controlling our ability to access fertilizer, bring it into the United States. Then I watched them buy up our chemical companies. As I worked on implementation of programs and policies at our state level and at the federal level, I watched us as we sold citizenship to Chinese communist members of the Communist Party for investment into our processing systems. And now most of our processing facilities are owned by the Communist Party or Chinese government. Now they are coming for our land. And when they buy up our land, they will complete their chain of control of our food supply.
Noem said between 2010 and 2020, the Chinese Communist Party's holdings of agricultural land in the U.S. increased by 5,300%.
Reports now show that China owns about 384,000 acres of U.S. ag land, valued at over $2 billion.
The governor said that should be alarming, especially because the U.S. Department of Agriculture says that may not even account for all of the land the party owns, because there is very little tracking of foreign interests in large transactions.
And they're a rapidly expanding national security threat that can't be ignored. So let me be clear. They are buying up our entire food supply chain. And when America can't feed itself and we rely on other members of another country to feed us, it becomes a national security issue. The country that feeds us will control us.
Committee Ranking Member David Scott said Wednesday he has concerns as well, but the committee must be careful not to contribute to violence against Asian Americans.
We on the Agriculture Committee condemn all bigotry, including race-motivated threats and acts of violence. This is about agriculture policy, not people policy.
Noem was just one of the panelists invited to speak at the hearing Wednesday. We'll have more on this on our next show. For the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network, I'm Jessica Domel.
Corn is looking very good in South Central Texas. Tom Nicoletti goes to Lavaca County for an update.
For today's program, we go to Lavaca County and farmer Mike Hanslick is standing by. He raises corn and hay and cattle in his county that is about halfway between San Antonio and Houston. And Mike, you have finished planting your corn for this spring. How is it looking? Has it emerged yet? Give us kind of a status report.
Yes, it's looking really good. I've had some ground that was a little bit on the dry side, and a lot of it came up that hit the moisture. And within the last week, we had about an inch and a half all the way on down to an inch and a few tenths. But that all, it's starting to sprout and come up too, what didn't come up. Overall, corn is, I'm very pleased with it. It's looking darn good. A little bit on the yellow side from the cool weather right now.
Are you dryland or irrigated?
We're dryland.
So certainly have to rely on Mother Nature and the rainfall during the spring months.
Yes, we do. We got all that rain in January, and seemed to me we have good bottom moisture, but it just dried off and turned real hard in some of the fields.
Now that we're into springtime, how do your pastures look? Are they greening up pretty good?
Yes, they are. They're really looking good, and cows look like they're in heaven with it.
So no more supplemental feeding at this point? They're pretty much grazing the landscape?
Yes. Put out hay, and they're just letting the bales sit. They don't care for it anymore.
Any different type of farming or ranching strategies for you this year concerning how the weather has been and the markets?
Well, I know the price of corn has dropped, and, you know, I've got some storage here at the house, and it's probably going to be the same as last year. We cut a lot of hay where it's been fertilized with the chicken litter that our two sons do for us, and we sell hay when we can and keep the rest.
That is agricultural producer Mike Hanslick in Lavaca County. I'm Tom Nicoletti with the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.
This is Jim Hearn in the Rio Grande Valley. Extreme South Texas stays cool and dry as spring is here. Planting and harvesting are moving along. We'll have those stories and more in today's report.
And there are two equine degenerative neurologic conditions affecting horses. Veterinarian Dr. Bob Judd has more on that coming up.
These stories, plus a look at the markets, are straight ahead on Texas Ag Today.
Catastrophic wildfires have scorched over 1 million acres in the Texas Panhandle. Homes, barns, fences, and livestock have been lost. You can help farmers and ranchers who have been affected by these fires by donating to the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. 100% of all donations received go directly to farmers and ranchers impacted by these fires. To make a tax-deductible donation, go to texasfarmbureau.org and click the red Wildfire Relief Fund button at the top of the page.
Now back to more Texas Ag Today.
Extreme South Texas is cool and dry as spring officially arrives. Jim Hearn reports from the Rio Grande Valley.
A series of early spring cool fronts have left extreme South Texas on the cool and dry side. The harvest of sugarcane, citrus, and vegetables are all continuing. The citrus harvest of grapefruit and Valencia oranges continue. Our trees are also in full bloom now, and irrigation crews are working on a three-week irrigation schedule. The valley is still dry. We are in need of a good rain. The onion harvest is here. The crop looks good, and there should be plenty of spring sweet onions in the supermarkets real soon. Row crop planting is over. Crops have emerged and, for the most part, are looking real good. Now, dry land crops have gotten a boost from some of the recent rains that we've had, particularly along the coast, and irrigated crops, well, they have plenty of irrigation water in the reservoirs at Amistad and Falcon, so we're in good shape there. Now, the harvest of the vegetable crops continued, cabbage, carrots, salad greens, and that should continue now for the next month to 6 weeks. For Texas Ag Today, this is Jim Hearn in the Rio Grande Valley.
There are two equine degenerative neurologic conditions affecting horses. Dr. Bob Judd says the number of cases of those conditions is increasing.
Of the two equine degenerative neurologic conditions that affect the horse, one disease is called equine neuroaxonal dystrophy, which affects the brainstem, and the other is called equine degenerative myelinencephalopathy, which affects the spinal cord. Dr. Sarah Como from the University of Pennsylvania indicates in Equine Disease Quarterly that the two diseases are similar other than the location of their effect. The most common clinical sign noted in horses is ataxia or wobbling when walking. The most common disease diagnosed in horses with ataxia is equine protozoal myoencephalitis, or EPM for short. However, the diseases can sometimes be distinguished as the degenerative diseases can cause behavior changes, which EPM does not. And these behavior changes can consist of horses just acting dull and quiet all the way up to being extremely excitable and dangerous for people around the horse. Also, horses with EPM typically have an asymmetric ataxia, in which one side is worse than the other, while the degenerative diseases typically have the same symptoms on both sides of the body. Causes of the degenerative diseases are not fully understood, but a deficiency of vitamin E seems to be involved. Some horses have low vitamin E levels when diagnosed, and others have normal vitamin E levels at diagnosis, but could have had low levels previously. At this time, there is no definitive diagnostic test for these degenerative diseases in the live horse, and the only method of diagnosis is by ruling out other diseases that cause clinical signs. And the disease can be diagnosed on postmortem exam. There is no effective treatment, and some horses will unfortunately need to be euthanized.
I'm Dr. Bob Judd. This is the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.
We'll check the markets coming up next on Texas Ag Today.
Wildfires have devastated Texas ranches, burning millions of acres of rangeland, destroying buildings and fences, and killing thousands of cattle. You can help by donating to the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. Go to TexasFarmBureau.org and click the red Wildfire Relief Fund button at the top of the page. 100% of every dollar you donate will go directly to a Texas rancher to help them rebuild. Go to TexasFarmBureau.org to donate.
Here's the latest market information on Texas Ag Today.
Let's take a look back at how the markets wrapped up on Thursday. Cattle futures traded both sides of unchanged. We ended up closing mostly lower, the exception being the nearby contracts on both live and feeder cattle. April live cattle up 57 cents, 188.37. The deferreds were lower. June down 27, 184.50. August live cattle down 42, 183.27. Same thing on feeder cattle. Nearby March was higher, up 62 cents, 250.87. Everything else lower. April feeders down 30, 254.62. With May feeder cattle down 72 at 258.07. We did see some activity pick up in the cash fed cattle trade. Here in the Southern Plains, we've sold cattle at 188 out of Texas and Kansas this week. That's $2 higher compared to the previous week. Boxed beef was higher, with choice up $1.04, $314.48. Select up $1.04, $303.75. Now let's check the auction barns. We're walking the pens with Larry Marble.
Doug Bass, Cattleman's Columbus. How did your last sale turn out?
We had a good sale, Mr. Larry. We ended up with 860 head of cattle. Market looked really good. I'd call packer cows and bulls higher, and the calf market steady to higher.
Good. Walk the pens with me.
Thinner lower yielding cows bring 78 to 115. Medium flesh calves 118 to 122. Better high yielding cows 123 to 139. Lower yielding bulls 110 to 124. Better high yielding bulls 128 to 158. Pairs bring from 1250 to 2500. Red cows anywhere from 1350 to 2200. 2 to 3 weight steers 270 to 425. Heifers 260 to 420. 3 to 4 weight steers 260 to 387. Heifers 250 to 3. 4 to 5 weight steers 250 to 355. Heifers 240 to 345. 5 to 6 weight steers 235 to 345. Heifers 220 to 302. 6 to 7 weight steers 230 to 287. Heifers $2 to 278. 7 to 8 weight steers 195 to 240. 45, heifers 180 to 243, and your 800 to 1,000 pound steers and bullions bring 185 to 239, heifers, heiferettes 135 to $2.
Good. Anything special on the the horizon there at Columbus?
No, sir. We do have, well, I say that. We've got a special sale that decided to have on May 25th. So if anybody has any consignments, give us a call. We've got a few calls already, new consignments. So y'all sure give us a shout there. Other than that, we've got a few cattle lined up for next week and getting a little rain today. So we're really happy about that.
Tell everybody how to get a hold of you, Doug Bass.
Yes, sir. Call me on my cell, 979-877-4454, or at the office, 979-732-2622.
Neighbor, that's it for this edition of Walking the Pens, Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network. I'm Larry Marble. That was Doug Bass, and you're our neighbor. Neighbor, good day.
Thanks, Larry. Back over to the futures market now, where lean hogs finished lower. April hogs dropped 40 cents, 84.90. May contract down $1.07, 89.90. Class 3 milk was lower. March milk down a penny, 16.42 a hundredweight, while April milk dropped 40 cents, 15.77 a hundred. Cotton closed slightly higher in a quiet, sleepy kind of trade. We did have a very positive USDA export sales report come out Thursday morning. That didn't seem to really excite the market, however. We closed with May cotton up 3 points, 92.21. July cotton up 14, 92.26. With new crop December cotton up 12, 83.92. The corn market managed to make a slight gain, maybe getting support from news that heavy rainfall has been coming down in Argentina, possibly hurting corn yields there. May corn up 1 3/4, 440 3/4. July corn up 1 3/4, 454 a bushel, with September up 1 3/4, 463 1/4. And a slight uptick in the wheat complex, both hard and soft wheat finishing slightly higher. May Kansas City wheat up 1 1/4, 581 3/4. New crop July up 1 3/4, 575 1/2. July Chicago wheat up 1 3/4, 562 a bushel. In the energy markets, April natural gas was unchanged at $1.69. May West Texas crude oil down 23 cents, 81.04 a barrel. The financial markets higher, with the Dow up 269 points, 39,781. The NASDAQ up 32 at 16,401. The S&P up 16, 5,241. That wraps up our look at the markets, and that wraps up this episode of Texas Ag Today. I'm Kerry Martin. Hope to see you back here next time as we cover the most important industry in this greatest state in the U.S. of A. Texas Agriculture.
Thanks for joining us for Texas Ag Today. Be sure to follow the Texas Ag Today podcast, found wherever you listen to podcasts. For more Texas farm and ranch news, check out our website at texasfarmbureau.org or tfbradio.com. Texas Ag Today is a production of the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.